This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everyone. It is Bob, Groz, and Tom. The show of record is underway on today's edition of Bob, Groz, and Tom. We talk about a team who's on pace to win 162 games this season.
I mean, am I the only idiot who taped the wrong channel last night, do you think?
I'm going to guess no. I'm going to guess if you just didn't look at the guide and you just programmed it to...
I looked at the guide and I saw that the game wasn't scheduled en route, and I just thought, well, it's a 2:30 a.m. start. It's probably not on the updated schedule. I'll just record, you know, route from 2:30 to 5 or 2:30 to 6.
And?
And it wasn't en route.
You got some good fishing.
Oh, because it was on ESPN.
Yeah. It just never occurred to me.
Yeah, tonight's will be the same thing.
Yeah, I got that. I won't make the same mistake tonight.
All right.
Well, usually when ESPN...
I'm just wondering if I'm the only one who did it.
No, I'm going to guess you
probably
are.
Not. Usually
just
when,
assume, right?
When ESPN has a game, though, we don't usually get it on ESPN here. We get it on route. So...
Yeah, usually it's on both, I think. Usually, because I've gone back and
maybe
forth.
Maybe it is sometimes.
Yeah.
So what were Blowers and Riz doing?
Radio, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, they must have had a crowded booth.
Yeah, I guess so.
Maybe they were switching off between. I have no idea. I didn't listen to the radio broadcast, but I did watch the TV broadcast, and it was interesting. Hey, 1-0, huh?
Yeah.
Huh? That'll be one of I'm predicting 72 wins on the season.
Are they going to hit the best record in baseball?
Yeah,
that's exactly.
Hey, pump
right.
it up.
Are they going to hit grand slams in every one of these games too?
Yes.
Opposite field. I mean, I saw the highlight package, and that was. A very impressive opposite field grand slam.
Is that a double at Safeco? Because think about it. It's indoors in the dome. And it looked like he fisted it over there.
Yeah, I think that fence is further. Because Safeco down the right field line
it's
is not
what,
very
three,
far.
It's like 330, isn't it?
No. I think left field is. Right field, I believe, is a much shorter.
T-Mobile, I meant.
Yeah. What are you talking about, man? Yeah, it certainly didn't. When he hit it, I didn't think it was leaving. He didn't look like he got all of it by any stretch.
Right field's 326.
326, okay. Way off.
At T-Mobile
Park.
It was 4 feet off, sorry.
Well, I don't know how far this fence was.
I don't know if the ball flies inside that dome or not.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it was fun to watch. It was very cool to see that happen, and it didn't look like he got all of it, and it just carried, and a lot of runs scored in this game. He had 16 runs
yeah.
scored in total. In this game, so pitching wasn't great on either side. Marco Gonzalez got off to a tough start, like he strikes out a guy, then he lays one right over the middle of the plate. Piscotty hits it out. Davis hits another one out, so he gives up two home runs, three earned runs. You had the error from Ryan Healy on the throw in that inning, so you had an unearned run. But overall, I thought you walked away going, all right, he sort of dialed it in. Right, it was the first game of the season. He's out there getting his legs under him. Only threw 69 pitches, and seemed like he started to find it.
I think depending on the situation, I'd rather have my pitcher start slow and then figure it out, than fall apart later.
Yeah,
well,
especially
and,
this early in the season.
Yeah, I mean this is super early in the season, like 2 weeks before or a week and a half before the season actually starts.
Well, this isn't even really the season.
So, yeah, and then your closer did a nice Edwin Diaz impression.
As it sits right now, he has more saves than Edwin Diaz. So
that's true.
Take that, Diaz.
There's going to be a lot of things you can say coming off of this game you're not going to be able to say for long, right? They're in first place. They're undefeated. They're on pace for 162.
Yeah, but
Tim Beckham's going to hit 1,000 for the season.
The other way to look at it would be to say that every other pitcher in the majors has a better ERA than Marco Gonzalez.
That is exactly true.
You know, one of the worst ERAs in the league.
Well, except for Mr. Rumbelow, who has an 81 ERA right now. It'd be 8-1. He goes a third of an inning, gets
like
three runs.
Beckham's bat flip, by the way.
Pretty cool. I'll take it. I think considering the scene where they were at, I think, you know, it was entertaining for the fans.
But do they enjoy that sort of thing over there? They don't like to showcase individuality in Japan.
I don't know. We've seen many of a video of Japanese players where they're just crazy on-deck stuff. Remember, we were watching
That's
a video of
true.
A guy in the box who
That's
was,
right.
I mean, just... otherworldly stuff. Like I can't even put into words what he was doing in
the box.
He was
like
box.
Dancing in and out of it.
Yeah, it was putting on a show in between pitches. And then
was
yes.
it well received is the question. Maybe it was.
That's a good question. I don't know. But we've seen it. We've seen a couple different videos we've watched before of like, man, check this guy out. What is he doing? You know, so there's some showmanship there.
Was it a loud crowd?
It was in spots. It was interesting to hear how they responded to, like, D. Gordon stealing a base or attempting to steal a base. After he stole second, he attempted to steal third. I think it was a foul ball, but you heard, oh, like the whole stadium, oh, when he was running. There seemed to be some sort of they were sort of enamored with the whole running aspect.
So it's more like a circus act, like when the acrobat's up on the –
Kind of, yeah, and it's quiet in between pitches. There were cheering in between as the pitcher's getting ready to deliver the pitch. It's quiet, and then they respond to whatever the result is.
Now, what did you think of them pulling Ichiro in the middle of the inning there? Because the crowd—that's not something that's traditionally done there. And Ichiro even talked about that after the
crowd didn't seem to get it.
They didn't really.
There was no noise at all when service, you know, waved him in. You see Ichiro jogging. I was waiting for the big,
yeah,
because they went crazy when he came up to the plate.
Yeah,
you know, he was you know, giving the salute, and they were going nuts, and it was very loud. But when he was coming off the field, I don't think they knew what was happening.
Not all traditions are the same, huh?
Until he was almost into the dugout, and then it started to pick up. Like, it feels like they got it then. Like, oh, he's not in the game anymore. They're pulling him.
Where's he going?
Yeah, literally, he ran from right, because they let him run out to right field and take his place out there, and then service comes out of the dugout and calls him in, kind of does the slow jog, and it's quiet. It's quiet. He's at the pitcher's mound. It's quiet. Then he gets to the third baseline, and then it starts to pick up momentum. And you see the A's, you know, giving him a round of applause, and he's kind of tipping his cap to them, and then the crowd starts to pick it up.
It wasn't necessarily, I don't think, disrespectful.
No, I don't.
But it just wasn't. It's not one of the traditions.
Just not a norm.
We have here.
Seemed like they just weren't either aware or maybe a little confused. I don't know. I'm not sure what they thought. But yeah, it was interesting because it wasn't what you would expect, based on how the reception went to him walking up to the plate, which was frenzied and very loud, versus he's being pulled from the game. I don't think they realized that's what was happening.
And he got himself a walk.
He did, a 12-pitch walk, right?
Was it 12? It might have been. I know he walked. He popped the other one up. What was funny is I can't even remember who was doing the play-by-play, but they made it sound like he got a hold of that one. And it barely out of the infield. But
still got it.
Their initial reaction was, you know, something along the lines, he got a hold of that. Well, that's really way up there.
Yeah, it was a short, it was a tweener almost, right?
Yeah, it was kind of deep second base. Just the quick, I think they wanted something to happen so badly, something good. And it was a pop-up.
So when does he actually retire? How does this go? He may play another game.
He is going to play.
Yeah, we know he's in the lineup for sure.
We know he's going to play. Scott Service said he will play tomorrow. Okay. Not sure if he'll
start. Sound like he was going to start.
Yeah, didn't commit to that, but said he will play.
So when is he going to retire? Is he going to go back into his same role as he did last year? He's going to be an executive in uniform with wristbands and all?
And taking batting practice and stretching?
Because how many more years can he do this?
I doubt it. I think that, and we're just guessing, of course, I think he's going to retire.
I think he is, too.
After tomorrow's game? Or tonight's?
In Japan.
Whatever the heck. This next game?
Yes.
Okay.
When you say retire in Japan, do you mean we're going to see more sort of ceremony, or he's just going to announce it there?
I think he's going to announce it there.
Because I could see him doing it here, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it'll be,
he'll probably do both. I would assume if he is going to call it quits after his appearance tomorrow, whether he starts, whatever happens, and they do something there, they'll honor him here without question. They'll do something here.
Right, because this can't go on for too much longer. We all understand what's going on in Japan.
Every visiting ballpark.
He's going to get the victory lap like Dirk Nowitzki.
Like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
We kind of knew the whole point of this was, the whole point of him last year remaining in uniform and doing that thing was based on him, you know what, playing those first two games in Japan. Maybe he wants to play in those and make that his swan song, so to speak. So I think that was kind of a, felt like they already had that as a plan last year. I just don't see it happening this year.
I felt like the reason why he remained in uniform last year was just because that's what he wanted to do. I agree with what you're saying. They knew that Japan was coming and that it would make sense to get him on the field. But I think that there's something about Ichiro that doesn't want to let go.
Yeah, if you read articles about him, that's certainly true. And he is 45.
Right. And which leads me to my next point. I won't be surprised if we don't hear about an official retirement in the near future because of that.
Because of what? Him not
his
wanting
competitive
to
competitive nature.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't think service is going to run him out there so he can be as competitive as he'd like and wear the uniform all you like, but you're not going to be playing in any games.
I know that, but there's an area in between him being on the field and him filing retirement papers.
Well, you know what, Tom? And they, I mean, they liked having him around last
year. Yeah, that's
true. So it wouldn't be a shock if he was in the exact same role this year. An executive in uniform.
Whatever that role was. Whatever he was tasked to do. I have no idea what he was supposed to be doing or what he did do. He could have been crucial to their success. I have no idea.
You mean to those 89 wins?
I don't even know what his title was. It was funny to talk to people
assistant
around
the,
there.
Assistant to the president or something like that, they called it, didn't they?
I don't know.
No, there was a title for it.
I know there was, but it wasn't common. It wasn't something like, oh, yeah, he's filling that spot that the other guy used to fill.
No.
He replaced that other guy in uniform that didn't play.
He took Andy Van Slyke's role.
Andy Van Slyke, another legendary Mariner.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, that was great. So, one in the books, 1-0. We'll see how you guys didn't give any official predictions on the season. I said 72 wins.
I think I said 74 at one point.
How could we be so far apart? Roz?
So, 74 for Tom, 72 for you.
I guess I'll go
70.
Yeah, I feel like closer to 74. What the heck? 74 is fine.
We're all right.
I'll stick with that. I mean, I don't think they're going to be terrible.
Games, we're all basically in the same spot.
Unless they're going to unload Encarnacion and Bruce here in the first month of the season. They've got a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, that would change a lot of things.
Definitely. And we still don't know what their bullpen really is going to look like.
You don't need anything more than Strickland. It's going to be Altavilla, Strickland, and Gerson Bautista. They're going to nail it down.
It's going to be Kieran and Ross Cup and Rumbelow.
Oh, my.
If they won 72, 73, 74 games, you're not going to be outraged by that. That's going to be just what you would expect. That's pretty good for a rebound.
I would say anywhere from 67 to 75 in that range. You're going, yeah. I think that's kind of the area of flexibility, right? 162 games, you're predicting 74, 72, 70. Yeah, anywhere from 68 to 75. You're like, yeah, it's about what you think.
Yeah, it's not the worst lineup you've ever seen, and there could be some budding stars in there. But pitching-wise, even with the starters, even the guys you have confidence in, it's pretty rare to go 1 through 162 and have everybody remain healthy the entire year and keep the exact same 1 through 5. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you had that, we're not sure how good these guys are.
Right.
So, and that's, I haven't mentioned anything about the bullpen.
Yeah, you're probably going to see Roenis Elias. You might see Justice Sheffield. You might see some other people get thrown into this rotation. I don't think you're only going to see these five guys, and that's it.
Yeah, and I'd be excited to see Justice Sheffield, right? As long as he does,
as long as he's ready, as long as you're not pushing him, there's no urgency behind a move with any of these young guys. So unless you are absolutely convinced there's nothing left to gain at the minor league level, don't bring him up.
But here's the thing. If they bring him up in a situation where, hey, we just need a body, we're going to give you one start, send you back down, I'm okay with that. What I don't want is, okay, we're out of catchers, therefore we need to rush Mike Zunino up here, and once you get here, you're here to stay. Put pressure on the kid. I don't want that.
If you're going to actually... What better word can we use besides tanking? If you're going to...
Acknowledging
pause,
it's not your year.
We're going to defer.
You're going to concentrate. Okay, deferring. If you're concentrating on future years, then I don't want to start his clock. So, I mean, especially if...
From a roster move
from
standpoint.
From a player control personnel standpoint, that's something that's now a factor for me. I don't know about you guys, but with their absolute elite prospects, I don't want them coming up until they're ready to be here.
There shouldn't be urgency attached to any single player. I don't care how close or how far away they are. That's one of the luxuries of a year like this where you're going, yeah, it's going to probably be a losing season. Certainly playoffs aren't a realistic consideration at this point. So if you're going to look at a silver lining in that scenario, it's that, yeah, you do have the luxury of letting those guys just sort of gel and find their rhythm and get their at-bats, get their time out there at the minor league level and feel like we didn't rush anybody because we didn't have to. It wasn't like, hey, we're nip and tuck here in a playoff race, and we need a bat or we need a pitcher to come in and fill this spot. You don't have to worry about that.
What if it's J.P. Crawford? I mean, he's got major league service time.
If they feel like he's ready, for me, it's the same for everybody.
But Graz brings up a good point with the roster.
That's why, at least as we sit here today, Vlad Guerrero Jr. will not start the season with Toronto.
Yeah,
they'll wait a month or something like that.
The Cubs did that with Chris Bryant.
I'm just talking about having that philosophy where they haven't really had that in the past.
Oh man, well if they have a need to bring up Justin Sheffield in April, they got bigger problems. I'm talking in September.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the plan is to bring him up during the season. I mean, that's at least what you've heard is that he's just about major league ready.
Yeah.
Right?
Are we talking Crawford or Sheffield?
Sheffield.
Yeah.
So
hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you would expect to see him brought up around the halfway point of the season anyway.
Yeah, I would. And, again, hopefully it's not a dire situation before that where they just need live bodies. But I'm excited
they can go find a scrap heap guy.
Go find Giovanni Gallardo.
Go find your next Wade LeBlanc. Guy who's had experience, who's a journeyman, who's not on a roster. There's a million of them out there. You need a body just to eat up some innings for you and just try to keep you with, you know, striking distance in a game or two. But, again, that's the luxury to a season that you're not real positive about. You don't have to do anything with your young talent. You're not pressured to do anything. So I don't want them to. If they need that body, if they need that pitcher, go out and find that Wade LeBlanc guy.
I agree.
Meanwhile, why don't we give them the pitching matchup for game two? How about that? It's brought to you by Heritage Distilling's BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon. Again, it'll be 2:30 a.m. It'll be on ESPN, Groz.
Thank you, Bob.
And for those of you, I'm guessing you were not alone. So anybody else wondering what happened on your DVR? Why did you get fishing? It's because these games are on ESPN and not on Root Sports.
You could have flipped around a little bit. You DVR.
I'm mad culping. I'm not.
You could have put some effort into it. Girl.
All I had to do was look and see that it wasn't on.
You could have flipped around a little bit
and somehow not come to the idiotic conclusion that, well, I guess they didn't update the automatic scheduling thing.
I like that Tom chalks it up just to a lack of effort. You could have pushed a button, arrow up, arrow down.
I never even thought of it.
Well, that was my problem. I don't sleep in a room where there's a TV, so I have to stream it on my laptop. And when I woke up, just incidentally, my internet wasn't working. There was something wrong with my Wi-Fi, and I was too tired to try and address it. So I just went back to sleep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Did you set your alarm to watch that?
No, I just woke up.
Oh.
It was like 3:45 or something.
Okay.
Had to go to the bathroom. And I was like, oh, I can watch some of the Mariners. And then my phone nor my laptop could connect to Wi-Fi, so I said, the heck with this.
Perfect. What was funny is I actually woke up to go to the bathroom as well, and I was looked at the clock and like, oh, they're playing. I've just flipped on the TV right as the grand slam took place. Santana hit it. Literally the first pitch I saw click, and I'm like, he didn't get that. That's a home run. That's a grand slam.
See?
Wow.
Would have been a double at Safeco, right. Or maybe an out.
Maybe. Maybe. All right.
That wall's
you mean at T-Mobile.
Oh, man.
It'll take a while.
Shame. I'm sorry.
It'll take a while.
I'm sorry.
You won't be alone.
No, but I'm like really sorry.
Okay. Okay. You should feel terrible.
I do.
Well, let's make everybody feel better. Give them the pitching matchup for game two.
Yusei Kikuchi, no stats, against Marco Estrada, also no stats.
Boy, the Mariners thought they had home field advantage last night.
Yeah. It's going to be
even more pronounced tonight, I would assume.
But again, like you were saying, the crowd there seems to respond in certain moments. It's not necessarily just a raucous, we're hanging over the wall type crowd.
Nope, except for the ugly Americans in the crowd.
What?
They were the ones yelling. They were showing the cameras isolating some Mariner fans.
Okay.
Some American fans out there wearing Mariner jerseys and yelling.
They were ugly?
You know, the old term, the ugly Americans.
Okay.
You know. But
I didn't get that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a very, I don't know, what would the word be? A very proper, disciplined crowd? Like they're very
measured.
Yeah, I mean, they're like that.
A little more reserved.
Yeah, but it's almost a respect thing. Like, we're not going to make all this noise as you're getting ready to throw the pitch.
It's like golf.
It's after. It sort of is. It's after the result of the pitch, whatever it is. Then the noise is made. Then it's quiet.
They don't yell, get in the hole, which is awesome.
Oh, that's the best.
Can we talk real quick about what happened when the first pitch was thrown out?
I didn't even know that it happened until we got here in the sports pit and Brent showed me the video.
Kaz Sasaki throws out the first pitch. Jojima's catching it, and they actually had a batter. It was Ricky Henderson. He's standing there in his Oakland A's uniform playing the A's. And he actually took a swing at the ball.
There are people all over the field
Ricky
stretching.
Did?
Yeah.
There are guys down third baseline laying down on the ground stretching.
Not paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah. And he takes a full swing at the ball. Like, he could have ripped a line drive down the third baseline.
Yeah, maybe he knew what he was doing and he wasn't actually going to make contact, but still.
That's hilarious.
I mean, you're playing with fire doing that.
Yeah, it was kind of, I didn't even know that had taken place until we saw that video, and it's like, yep, that seems very Ricky.
Exactly. Can you imagine if he connected and he ripped the ball down the third baseline?
Yeah, I'd like to know if he missed on purpose, because it was from a distance, like from an outfield camera, like somebody's phone, so you couldn't really see that closely what was going on. But he took a full swing, and I was like, did he foul it? It was hard to tell if he even made contact.
I don't think he did.
But there, you just saw, you know, pregame how the players were laying on the ground stretching and doing all their different routines out there, and they're all over the outfield, all over the third baseline, and he takes a rip at the ball.
Ricky being Ricky.
For the first time, by the way, I don't know if you saw any pictures of him. Because Ricky is in the best shape of maybe any athlete during his time, especially.
Yeah.
Looks like he's got a little LeBonza on him there.
Little
he's
punch?
Got, little yeah. punch going there, yeah. Yes, he does.
Yeah, for the first time I've ever seen him. I mean, look, he's in his mid to late 50s now?
He's got to be.
Probably, yeah. He's got
to
be.
He started in the late
60, 70s. Right?
He's probably, might be 60 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we'll forgive him. But
forgive him for the full cut.
I can't remember the last time I actually saw Ricky Henderson. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool though. I mean, it's good to see him win. This game having an impact on what your expectations are, I don't think this should change anything for you, good or bad. I don't think you should worry about Mitch Haniger, who was 0-for-4, or think that, you know, Beckham's going to hit 1,000 on the season. He's 3-for-3 with the home run
I got to admit, I thought that last time they were in Japan and Dustin Ackley homered in the opener, I thought he was going to have a great year based on that. Ackley looked ready. Here we go.
But he was also a guy that was drafted top five and had all this expectation attached to him. So
it was okay for me to think that?
I don't blame you for feeling okay. Some level of optimism about a guy who was so highly touted, right? And everybody thought, this is a can't-miss prospect out there. So you see that, you go, yep, more of that to come. No, unfortunately not.
Hopefully some more opposite field home runs, though, to come from Mr. Santana, who is definitely a part of the future here.
His story is so weird, isn't it? Hits 30 home runs in the season. The very next season, he becomes a part-time player because they acquire
Yelich and Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah.
And he's in his mid-20s. And with apologies to you, Bob, they got him for Ben Gamel.
All right, I want you to slow down there. Take it easy on Ben.
I mean, you know what I mean, though?
Well, yeah.
Nothing against Ben Gamel, but I mean...
They needed more power in that left field spot.
I mean, there aren't many... 25-year-old or 26-year-old 30 home run guys who are available for
26,
backup outfielders.
He'll be 27 in August. Yeah, I mean, he's got pop. He's shown that. He hit 11 home runs the year before and then hit 30 in 2017. And then 2018, he played in just 85 games and had 5 home runs. So we'll see if he can be a consistent power threat in that lineup, especially if they move Encarnacion, which I don't know if they'll be able to or not, but if they move him, you're definitely going to need Santana to step up.
He's having a big year. Oh, Encarnacion.
Yeah.
I could see him moving him.
Oh, I think that's the hope.
Yeah. I mean, if he's just toiling.
You're not going to get a lot for him.
11 home runs by the All-Star break.
You'll get a fungo bat.
He's injured, right,
yeah.
Exactly.
All right, we'll talk more about what happened out there in Tokyo. We're going to talk some NFL as well today. Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com will join us. Jake Heaps will join us, as he does every Wednesday. The Guru will join us in person, so that'll be fun. Meanwhile, a huge name that the Seahawks might want to take a look at for their defensive line. We're going to ask Greg Rosenthal about that coming up next. It is Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is Bob Gross and Tom. Coming up in 15 minutes, there's somebody out there who doesn't even believe that Gonzaga exists. True story. Talk about that coming up. But right now we talk some NFL with a man I think everybody is familiar with from NFL.com. Greg Rosenthal is with us. Greg, how are you, sir?
I'm great. That tease really worked on me. I want to hear what this Gonzaga, unbeliever has to say.
We got to disprove the myth. It's going to happen in 15 minutes. But hey, want to talk some football with you? And you wrote a piece talking about players that are still available and where you thought they would be a good fit. And one of the names you threw out there was in Ndamukong Suh, and you picked the Seattle Seahawks as a good fit. For people that didn't read what you wrote, give a little some summary of why you think that'd be a good fit.
Oh, they were in on him last year, and so that's where it started, was they showed interest before he signed with the Rams. You know, they have two good young defensive tackles in Jaren Reed and Puna Ford, but to me, Sue's a little bit more of a pass rusher. He fit nicely in a rotation. You can put him at defensive end sometimes, like the Rams. He just kind of fits with the high pedigree veterans that the Seahawks seem to like to go for.
Did Sue, did he hurt himself with his play last year?
A little bit. I mean, he's not going to make as much money this year as he did a year ago. He's 32 years old, so it just makes sense. But he was solid. You know, he was asked to stop the run more. He was a pretty good run stopper. I think the Rams certainly noticed that he played his best football, I would say by far, in the playoffs. So I don't think he was a $14 million player last year during the regular season. But if you go watch the tape of those three playoff games, especially the two NFC, but even the Super Bowl too, I mean, he made a difference. He was getting pressure on the passer. He can occupy blockers. He's just kind of realizing this is a guy who's made about as much money as anyone that plays defense in NFL history. So he's going to get used to the fact that he's going to have to sign a one-year, $8, $9, $10 million contract, something closer to that. And for him, that's a pretty big pay cut.
Yeah, and it's funny. We think of the Seahawks, Greg, as a team that probably isn't going to get into a bidding war over somebody like that. Are the figures you just mentioned there, is that what you think he would command?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get a multi-year deal. I think he's absolutely, and we spoke with him on our podcast. I saw him a few times at practice, too. I really do think he's interested in playing for a team that has a chance to contend if the Seahawks would qualify. I think he is thinking about the Hall of Fame even, you know, and in playing for a winning team helps that idea and that he could help out a team. And Seattle has a great way of kind of focusing on what you do well on defense, tailoring your role. And I don't think they would need to be in a bidding war, whether it's the Seahawks or the Colts or the Patriots, I feel like are a possible team for him. I think it's going to be someone who convinces him that they have a plan for him, and it's not going to be something that totally breaks the bank.
Hey, just before we move on from Ndamukong Suh, I'm curious about your thoughts on his performance overall last year. Do you chalk that up to a guy who's gotten older, as you talk about his age, and can't be that consistent, you know, pressure guy that he's been in his career, game in, game out? It seemed like he sort of saved it up for the postseason, and a lot of people talked about, well, his work ethic wasn't great. He didn't really put the effort in until the end of the season. Is that how you see it, or do you just see it as a guy who got older and just really can't physically do it game in, game out?
Yeah, I think he's a guy, and this is why I thought Seattle might be a good fit, that would probably be better off playing 500 snaps rather than 800. I mean, if you look at his snap totals from the last 3-4 years, very few people have played as many snaps as him. I mean, he was playing 1,000 a year in the interior. I think the Rams looked at him, and they saw a really good run defender still. And that's kind of what he was used for. He's not as good of a pass rusher as he used to be. I think you might, and whoever signs him, whether it is the Colts or the Patriots or the Seahawks, I think they'll use him a little more sparingly and try to get a little more juice from his pass rush by not having him on the field every down.
Is he the best player left in free agency?
I go Justin Houston. I really think Justin Houston's getting undersold here, and I think he's surprised too. I heard there was about three teams in on him, and he was about to sign early this week or it was late last week. The Ravens were one of those teams. He was really good for the Chiefs last year. You know, he was making $17 million a year, and they were changing their scheme, so I get why he didn't fit there. Had two sacks in the playoffs for them, can stop the run, too. He's only 30 years old. He's not 33, 34. And so I don't think he likes the market that's been out there for him, but to me, he's the best player left by far.
I need you to settle something for me here. I realize that what the Raiders got back for Khalil Mack was more than the Giants got back for Odell Beckham. But how is one trade great for the Raiders and the Beckham trade is terrible for the Giants, logically speaking?
Well, it's funny because the conventional wisdom now on that Raiders trade is you know, moving towards that it was a good trade for the Raiders. I don't know if it was a great trade for the Raiders by any means. I know there's, you know, an analytics argument that they were dumping that salary and they were going to have to pay him $25 million, and you got, you know, really good picks. I don't think they got better. I don't think it was a good trade. The difference, though, to me, is that the Giants had already paid the signing bonus for Odell Beckham. That is a huge difference. So the Browns got the best part of his contract. They didn't have to pay that $25 million guaranteed in a signing bonus off the top. They just get the rest of the value, and I think that made the trade even worse for the Giants.
Hey, as far as the Giants go, Greg, they've received some criticism and just sort of a lot of question marks around what it is exactly Dave Gettleman is doing. I mean, you trade away a 26-year-old receiver in Odell Beckham Jr. and whatever you think of his skill level, whether he's the best amongst the best. It looks like, okay, we're rebuilding. Landon Collins is gone. Odell's gone. But then you sign Golden Tate, who I like a lot, but you're talking about a guy who's over 30 and pay him a good chunk of money, no less, to be there. So I get why it's confusing to people in terms of what the goal is. What do you think of what the Giants have done outside of Odell, but just the signings and Landon Collins and everything else?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense because the number one thing they did is commit to Eli Manning for another year. And they've been doing that year after year. And he's the highest paid player on the team by far. And they just gave him a roster bonus. And he's, in a best case scenario, an average starting quarterback. And I think he's been below average. So that's where it really doesn't make any sense. I don't mind the Golden Tate signing, but getting rid of Olivier Vernon, getting rid of Beckham, getting rid of Collins, these are guys in your 20s. That's who you should build around. What they want to do is kind of be like the Seahawks, what they did last year, and build or rebuild on the fly and win as you go. And I get it. In an NFL where you're always 1 year away from getting fired, they're trying to win now and have their cake and eat it too. But it makes no sense because they gave the contract to Beckham a year ago, and that deal is really hamstringing them. I mean, they could have kept Landon Collins if they hadn't gave that Odell Beckham contract a year ago.
Jordy Nelson's a name that's come up around here. How much do you think he still has left in the tank?
I didn't think much going into last year. He certainly didn't prove me wrong for most of the season. He did look better, I would say, in December. You know, I think he's got more than Brandon Marshall had when the Seahawks brought him in a year ago, but I wouldn't be expecting miracles. I do not. At best, I think he's a rotation type of guy.
Hey, Greg, quickly, Frank Clark's a guy they put the franchise tag on. He has yet to sign that sheet, wants to work out a long-term deal. Do you rank him amongst the elite players? Is he a guy, if you were the GM of the Seahawks and you were John Schneider, you would commit to this guy for, and we don't know what he wants, let's just say $17.5, $18 million a year. Would you do that, or would you say, all right, we feel like we can get something comparable if we let him go and sign two players to sort of shore up that part of the defense?
In this market, I would. You know, Za'Darius Smith's contract with the Packers didn't make it any easier, and this is what happens. At, you know, kind of mid-level or better-than-average starters like Smith signed for $17 a year suddenly, and then everyone like Frank Clark, who to me is a top 10 pass rusher at defensive end. So to me, he is worth the money. I was really surprised to hear that he could be available in a trade, because when you hear that, that usually means a trade could happen eventually. And he is definitely one of those names I'm keeping an eye on over the next month, because we saw some surprising trades in what's usually a very quiet time in the NFL, late March, you know, mid, early April. But Clark's one, you know, when we go to the owners meeting this weekend, that I'm definitely going to be asking around about.
Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com has been our guest here with Bob Gross and Tom. Greg, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Great talking to you guys. And I'll hang on and I'll listen to the Gonzaga Truther coming up.
Thanks, Greg.
We appreciate it, Greg.
The Gonzaga Truther.
That's exactly right. There's Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com. Does a great job covering the sport, obviously. And as he just touched on, there's somebody out there who doesn't even believe that Gonzaga exists. Wait a minute. What? Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's Bob Gross and Tom.
Wait a minute. It is Wait a Minute What here with Bob Gross and Tom. Coming up at the top of the hour, Jake Heaps will join us.
I thought that was at 2 o'clock.
Well, it says 1 o'clock here.
That would be incorrect, sorry.
Here, your mic's not on. There you go.
That would be incorrect. I'm sorry.
It's at 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Okay.
The guru.
The guru will join us at 2, not 1 o'clock. So, my bad. Meanwhile, we'll talk more about what's going on with the Seahawks and some other NFL news happening at the top of the hour. But we talked about it. We had Greg Rosenthal is sitting on pins and needles right now.
He's not the only one.
He's sitting on pins and needles saying, wait a minute, there's somebody out there who doesn't even believe that Gonzaga exists. Well, apparently that somebody is Jimmy Kimmel.
The other number one seeds are UNC, UVA, and Gonzaga. And I have a theory. I know this might be controversial, but here it is. I don't believe Gonzaga exists. I have never heard the word Gonzaga outside of college basketball. I don't know where it is. I don't know anyone who went there. I don't even know anyone who knows anyone who went there. Go on YouTube and search Gonzaga. All you will get are basketball videos. Nothing else. Gonzaga is the I have a girlfriend in Canada of college.
That's kind of a funny line.
That's a pretty good line. What? Do you think Gonzaga fans are going to take offense to that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, without a doubt.
They'll absolutely hate Jimmy Kimmel now. They'll boycott Kimmel.
There will be some who will. You know that, Bob.
Oh, come on. I hope not, Gonzaga fans. That was kind of fun.
What does the term Gonzaga come from?
It's
the word itself.
It's Jesuit.
Oh, is that what it is?
It's a Jesuit university, so I'm just making a leap.
Same people that came up with San Diego, which means, you know.
Well, like Loyola, if it were called that, yeah. I mean, I don't know what the word Loyola means.
You could probably ask that question about a lot of these schools, yeah. But yeah, it was kind of funny.
It was kind of, you know what, it would have been a lot funnier in 1999.
Yeah, I like the closing line was pretty good, though.
Yeah.
They are the college equivalent of my girlfriend's in Canada.
Yeah, she's a model. She's in Canada.
A model, lives in Canada.
She's from Regina.
That's pretty good. Meanwhile, Vontaze Burfict, he was not out there long.
He's already signed?
Yes, with the Oakland Raiders.
Oh.
And he's going to be teammates with a guy he's beat up on the field to a certain extent, throwing some nasty hits on there.
Like lit up a couple of times.
In fact, knocked him out of a few games, and that would be Antonio Brown. There was some heat between those two guys, but now apparently it's all love. They've shared some texts, and they've put it out there on Twitter, and they're ready to win. They're ready to be teammates and be best friends.
Man, I don't know how you put that aside. It's one thing if you're both on defense, right? Because you're going to have to play alongside each other, and you go out there into the battles together. But, man, some of the hits, I kind of forgotten about. I remember that one playoff game where the Bengals had that game won, and they penalized themselves out of the building, lost it. And one of the hits, one of the big hits in that game, was Burfict on Antonio Brown late. I mean, that was a...
And didn't he knock him out for the rest of the playoffs that year?
I think you're right. Practice will be interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it says Burfict appears to have buried the hatchet, and Brown following a helmet-to-helmet hit during the AFC wildcard game January 2016, which resulted in Burfict being suspended for 3 games and Brown being sidelined for the remainder of the postseason.
Man, John Gruden's got his hands full there.
Sure does.
I wonder if this is just ego. Thinking, oh, yeah, I can make it work with all these guys. We're the Raiders of the 70s. We're the Island of Misfit Toys. I mean, this guy's been out of the coaching game a long time. I'm not sure what
really
he thinks he's building
there. Really didn't have a
great
return last year, did he?
No, he did not.
Not last year.
He did not. Just from Burfict's point of view, he says, we're on the same team. It's one goal. It's all positive, man. He's a great player. I'm going to approach him just like I do all my other teammates. There's no negative here. We're on the same team. We're trying to win a championship here. And then I guess Antonio, he also said that Brown and he could end up as the closest friends on the team. And then Brown, I guess, took to Twitter and said, just talk to King55, whatever his Twitter handle is. Black and silver, baby. Hashtag Raider Nation. Hashtag bully season.
Oh.
Prediction. Neither the Browns or Raiders make the playoffs.
That's a hot take right there.
That is a scalding hot take.
Prediction. The Browns win the AFC North.
Okay.
And battle for the best record in the NFL.
Yeah. I think the Steelers are still in it. I think the Ravens are definitely still in it.
I feel weird. I actually think the Browns have a better chance than the Raiders do. That's weird to say about the Browns.
I would say that. I agree with that. Browns have a better chance than the Raiders.
Yeah.
I think they're a better team as they're constructed, but
it's weird. They've just been the doormat for so long. To say that out loud, you feel like, wait a minute. Did I really just say that?
Yeah, and we're comparing the Browns and the Raiders, by the way, as good teams. I think the Raiders could never get off the ground. The Browns might actually have a good season, though. If they go 9-7 and miss the playoffs, it's still a pretty good season.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a huge jump from where they were without their additions, without the players they're bringing in. They were 7-8-1.
Yeah, so. I don't think the Browns are going to be a bad team. I just could see them missing the playoffs.
Meanwhile, Le'Veon Bell doing an interview with Peter King, or with SI, excuse me, and said, Steelers, good organization, but they don't treat you like you're human. I guess when you get a $14.5 million offer thrown at you, you feel like a piece of meat.
They're a good organization, but they're not human.
Says Pittsburgh is a great organization, Bell told SI. They've got a great owner, head coach. They've kind of, he says, they kind of treat you like, they don't treat you like you're human. What I mean by that is like, yeah, I'm an NFL athlete, but I'm still a human being. You know what I'm saying? I still play video games. I still make music. They don't want to allow you to be yourself. They want you to be, if you're a Steeler, you're literally playing football 24/7. You're not supposed to be playing video games and like making music, playing basketball. You're not supposed to be doing that. You're supposed to be working out.
Good thing he doesn't play for the Phillies.
Actually, you can play video games with the Phillies as long as you stay away from the catcher.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
stay away from the catcher.
Wasn't it the catcher who smashed
first baseman?
Oh, first baseman.
Yeah. Carlos Santana. I mean, yeah. All right. Making a joke. It's all right.
We expect some return on the investment of $14.5 million or whatever they offered him. We'd like you to be dedicated to your craft during the season. Off season, do what you want to do. I mean, obviously they don't want him out there riding motorcycles and ATVs and risking his health, but you want to sit inside, play video games 24/7? They'd probably prefer that.
Right.
So when is it a problem? Is it during the season? Is it during practice? Is it during a meeting? When is it a problem for you to play video games?
Yeah, why is it a problem at all? So because you can't, what does he want to be a musician too? He wants to.
I think he's released music that's really bad.
Okay, so because he's done that and he wants to play video games, that's why life is unfair? What is he, in seventh grade?
Well, he's not the Steelers' problem anymore.
Nope, he's not. But the idea that, you know, hey, they're making a massive life-changing investment in you for this amount of time, during these months, right?
Concentrate.
Just during these months, just be devoted to this.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a big, you know what? You pay me a quarter of what you offered him, I'll be as devoted as you. I'll sleep there every night. I'll wear nothing but Steelers gear every day. How about that?
You probably do more than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's come on. You act so put upon. They expect you to be devoted to your craft and your focus be on the team during the season.
Not surprising that his O-line sold him out at all.
Not really.
Yeah, I've got to believe that a lot of those guys, as talented as he is, and nobody's debating his ability on the field, but I've got to feel like there's some sense of relief in that locker room. Like, okay, thank goodness.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Got to be.
Ugh. All right, coming up, we've got a little bit of news on Doug Baldwin, and it doesn't seem like good news. Talk about that next with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.